The Guardian.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Guardian Christmas Eve Guardian Football Weekly Special. The Premier League, Manchester City's procession continues. They score another four while only Spurs of the other good teams get 3 points. El Clasico, Barca smash Real. We'll try and phone Sid and probably get his voicemail. And in Italy, more pain for Benevento. We'll talk about that. Your questions, feedback corner. And that's Guardian Football Weekly Christmas Special. Merry Christmas says, what's Lars having for breakfast on Christmas Day?
I've had some traditional meatball type things called medisterkake. Norwegians will know from a special family recipe with some bread and some mustard.
Okay, but what are you having on Christmas Day was the question.
Oh, damn, Christmas Day. Sorry, that was today. Christmas Day, leftovers from the big chicken. I think we're having a big chicken. Not sure.
Okay. Surely you've seen in your fridge if there's a big chicken.
No, there's so many things in the fridge, I don't know what the plan is. So what comes in what order is very hard to
say.
And
it is your Christmas Day today, so...
Yes, that's why I sort of, yeah, because Norwegians, we celebrate on the 24th.
Okay, good. Alistair says, how many bottles of Carver have you and Barry done so far today? Cheers.
Two.
We've done two. We did a radio show. We're now on beer. And producer Jonathan has brought in what looks like a bottle of petrol.
It looks like one of those bottles of Cure-All you see hucksters selling off the back of a wagon in a Western.
It smells like...
And it smells
and it
like diesel.
Like it's chunky. Yeah, it's got lumps, which is not a thing I look for in my drinks.
I'm drinking out of a mug. Yeah. There's bits in it, and it smells...
It's like
Benelin.
Yeah, it's like Listerine Extra, isn't it? Really?
I was a shot now.
Go for it, Baz. Here we go. Before and after. That was me.
Yeah, it's Benelin.
Andrew says, is Barry's chair suitably decorated with Christmas decorations? And who's Santa? Who's the elves? And is there a donkey? There's no donkey. And there was almost no Paolo because you bought your dog and the receptionist wouldn't let the dog in.
Yeah, apparently The Guardian has a strict no dogs policy, which I strongly suspect that I have seen broken before, but apparently today is not the day for breaking it.
So you'd think the Daily Mail wouldn't allow dogs in.
Yeah.
But you'd have thought The Guardian...
Well, no, I think they'd allow dogs in. They just wouldn't allow foreigners in.
Foreign dogs.
Yeah.
But you'd have thought The Guardian would be open-minded like that.
You would. You would. I think it's a loss to The Guardian and a loss to this podcast. Certainly Baz. I think Baz is even more gutted than I am that the dog isn't here.
He was a very nice dog. A little dachshund.
Yeah. I don't like dogs.
I imagine the Daily Mail office is just British bulldogs roaming the corridors with no German shepherds or French mastiffs. And, yeah.
And pictures of Winston Churchill. Anyway... where should we start? Arsenal 3, Liverpool 3. That was fun, wasn't it, Lars?
Yeah, in the second half, I saw a tweet that said, shambles, we've got no leaders, our defence is too soft, we have no holding midfielder. And I kept looking at this tweeting, which team does this man support? could be anyone, really. But no, God bless them. I mean, if you're an Arsenal fan hoping to win the league someday, or you're a Liverpool fan hoping to win the league someday, this is a very frustrating game. But for everyone else, this is amazing. God bless these two teams. May they continue going forward in this manner. It's great fun.
I mean, Baz, it must have been a joy to be an Arsenal fan just for that 6 minutes of just completely ridiculous... Well, it wasn't great football either, was it? It was just hopeless defending from Gomez, hopeless goalkeeping from Mignolet, and then the Ozil goal was nice.
Yeah, well, I think all three of the Arsenal goals were, you know, bad mistakes. And insofar as any Arsenal fans of my acquaintance are ever joyful, and they seem a quite miserable bunch at the best of times. I loved that game of football, and I'm sort of thinking, you know, the hipsters, for want of a better word, who are into their heat maps and their... You know, formations. There was no formations. It was just chaos, absolute chaos. But neither team's making any effort to defend, and I loved it. More, please. You know, I said on Thursday's pod, you asked me, was I looking forward to this, the battle for fourth, and I'm not interested in who comes fourth, but I I had a feeling that was going to be a great game of football, and I wasn't disappointed. It was sort of from the Ellis James school, just absolute chaos, mistakes.
And why do you have to bring him up? Seriously, it's Christmas.
But he's great.
Oh, he is good. Yeah, you're right. Paolo, there is an issue with goalkeepers. I would say probably, I mean, obviously for Liverpool, but Arsenal as well, Cech is not the keeper that he used to be. And when you look at Manchester United going to Arsenal, and they went ahead, and then David De Gea was incredibly good. And then Liverpool went ahead, and Simon Mignolet was not incredibly good.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of Arsenal fans, I hear this from plenty of Arsenal fans, are looking across to Turin right now and going, hang on, there's a goalkeeper playing for Juventus who's had five clean sheets in a row, who could have been at Arsenal, who's been on loan for the last 2 years at Roma and is, you know, doing pretty well. Yeah, I think there's lots of Arsenal fans who think...
Sorry, one little caveat.
What's
he's
that?
Playing behind the Juventus defence.
Yes, that is true. And I've sort of resisted that narrative in general because I think Szczesny is still getting a little bit... overrated is the wrong word. People just sort of... I think his qualities are still his qualities and his capacity for making howlers is still what it was. But Cech is looking like he's aging a little bit earlier than some keepers do. You know, some keepers go on happily till they're 40 and some keepers
don't. Looks at least 45.
but again, what Baz said is completely valid. I mean, Arsenal's defending is riotously bad. I think that it's bizarre the levels we've got to now, and this was flagged up by Arsblog, it's not an original point, but that Wenger is sort of saying in press conferences, oh, you know, Ashley Maitland-Niles, he can do all right at fullback, but he's not that good at headers. And guess what? Liverpool are targeting him with back post crosses and seeing if he can win headers, which he can't. It's like your manager just sort of announces, here's a weakness we've got in his press conferences and sees how it goes. Yeah, it's the sort of thing that you could get angry about if it wasn't sort of funny and very predictable. And also, I think, as Baz is saying about the entertainment of football, in all the years to get stressed out about things like this, City are going to run away with the title whatever happens, so you might as well have some fun games along the way.
Is anybody a bit bored of how excitable Jurgen Klopp is? Do you know what I mean? I just wondered. I was watching him getting so over the top happy and sad and angry, and I'm obviously, you know, just a sort of typical football viewer loves Jurgen Klopp just because you should. And then I just was watching it going, just calm down a bit.
I think if there were many more of him, it would be very annoying. But it's just him, and compared to some of the dour faces you see around the league, like, I'm happy he is as unhinged as he is, to be honest.
Okay, that's fine. I'll change my tune. I like him again.
but this is, like, if you're an Arsenal fan or a Liverpool fan, this is an infuriating game. Because for Arsenal, you saw for a period just how good they could be if they were arsed all the time. And for Liverpool, you can understand how good they'd be if they could defend in any shape or form. So you must be going insane, right, if you're supporting any of those teams.
Well, I mean, the other thing for Arsenal is that two of the players who scored those goals are also probably not going to be there next year. So you're looking at a few good things and thinking, well, how long have we got that for either?
A really sad story in the papers about Emmanuel Eboué. I don't know if you've seen this, sort of gone through a divorce, lost his assets, had to transfer his house to his wife, estranged from his kids, and you know, lost his grandfather who raised him, lost his brother, and is in a very sad way. We wish him all the best. I don't know, I was saying before the pod, it shouldn't make any difference, but because he's such a sort of lovable figure as a player, for some reason it makes it, I don't know, it doesn't make it worse, but it just makes you feel sadder about it, Paz.
Yeah, well, he seems to have been very naive and badly advised, which I'd imagine a lot of footballers are. He claims to be totally ignorant of the machinations without just even looking after his own personal finances. But I did find it odd. It was an interview by Darren...
Lewis?
Darren Lewis of the Mirror, yes. Sorry, Darren. how quickly they forget. But and a good interview to get. But he mentioned in the course of this interview, a judge in a divorce awarded his wife 100% of everything they owned, which seems weird. Mm. I've never heard of that happening before, but I wouldn't claim to have any idea of what's going on in the Eboué household. But yeah, he's fallen on hard times, and he was basically using that interview to just appeal for help or a job. I don't think he's particularly looking for a handout. And it is sad, he's only 34, he could still be playing, you know.
Yeah, great shame. Of Arsenal, Liverpool and Spurs, back to the football, who would you say wins the race for fourth place? powder?
Between Spurs and Arsenal?
Spurs, Arsenal and Liverpool. If we're presuming, which we are today, because I just have, that United and Chelsea will be in the top three.
I think I've always thought that Tottenham looked the most sort of well-rounded team in that group. Tottenham, not so long ago, people were saying they might be able to mount a title challenge. I think that that's always been a little bit fanciful with City being as good as they are, but I think they're very much a more balanced team than Arsenal, certainly. And I think that, well, a lot more balanced team than Liverpool as well. Liverpool have got a bit more going forward, but I think I'd still favour Tottenham, yeah.
Especially if apparently Alderweireld and Wanyama are back in training, I think. They won 3-0 at Burnley. Harry Kane, hat-trick. Lars, you want to discuss Dele Alli dive or not dive?
Well, because it's another one of those that sort of drives me slightly insane, because you have Graham Paul saying afterwards that it was a correct decision to award the penalty, no dive. You have people, ex-players on the TV saying that if there's contact in the box there, he's entitled to go down. But there's nothing about that in the rules. And I spoke to a former international... I asked a former international referee last night.
Was it Kalina?
No. But someone who's not English.
Anders Frisk.
No. Who said that it was a clear dive. And the thing, it's really intriguing to me that you've got Graham Paul and another referee who are completely disagree on whether this is a dive or a penalty. And I think whatever you think about, and what I think is maybe not the most important thing, but whichever side of this argument you come down on, I think it is a problem for football that the rules are so vague, and the way the rules are used in practice is so, you know, that there's a difference there. That we don't actually agree on what a dive is. And I think when you have that situation, having a panel that's meant to send down suspensions after the fact, when we don't actually agree on what the offence is and what it looks like, I think that's very problematic.
But so, you must be pleased that Burnley lost.
More of this fake news, Max. No, but if you look at that situation, the Dele Alli situation, and you look at the one Umar Niasse was banned for, and you look at them from all the angles, and you look at them side by side, there's not a heck of a lot of difference between them. And I suspect Alli won't get done for it. And if I was an Everton fan, I'd feel slightly aggrieved about that.
Baz, you did them. If you did the minute by minute, didn't you, Baz?
I did, yes. I had a great time. I loved it.
Thanks.
Harry Kane, obviously, much has been made of he's equaled Alan Shearer's Premier League goal scoring record for a calendar year.
I hate calendar year.
Why calendar year? When, you know, it just seems a really random thing. Football is a seasonal thing. It doesn't work in calendar years. It's quite an achievement. I don't want to disparage Harry Kane's achievement. He doesn't need to be propped up by these calendar year stats. He's good enough. You know, he's one of the best strikers in the world. If he was being sold tomorrow, he'd probably go for the thick end of 200 million quid. And this calendar year business, I'm not happy with it.
Who is
the
best?
I want a large protest.
Who's been the best podder of the calendar year?
Me, always me.
Who's been the best pod host of the calendar year?
Ellis James.
Second?
Jackie Oatley.
Third?
James Richardson.
Fourth.
Paul McInnes.
Manchester City 4, Bournemouth 0. Paolo, I challenge you to say something interesting about Manchester City that no one has said yet.
That's a little harsh. Mm. Put me on the spot.
It's not easy though, is it? I mean,
we've run
out of superlatives. We're going to have to start inventing words.
Yeah, they're extremely compelling, extremely expensive, fun to watch despite the fact they're trampling on everyone football team. I don't know what I can say that's new about them that hasn't been said.
Barry, you just picked up the bottle of Opal, which is...
Yeah, I'm just thinking if we have another few shots of Jonathan's Icelandic cure-all, we'll probably think of more superlatives will hove into view.
What have you got there, Lars?
Oh, you should try. This is another one of Jonathan's fine imports. It's a Danish akavit, which is something we'd have in my country for Christmas, or we'd have the Norwegian akavit, I think.
Only 45%.
We also have a bottle of scotch on the table here.
Yeah.
Age 12 years. Fresh, sweetly fruity and smooth-bodied. Quail Illa, 12-year-old, is rounded and clear as the shapes of the still room, glimpsed by hazy shafts of sunlight glancing through the morning cloud.
You could do the advert, if they ever did the advert.
Congratulations, by the way, on your Gaviscon triumph.
Advert of the year, Gaviscon. We saw off M&M's.
Yeah. Not M&M.
No.
M&M's.
M&M's, yeah. We beat M&M's in the Advert of the Year Awards. Another award ceremony I was neither at nor thanked for. So that's good. Leicester City 2, Manchester United 2. This was a good game. I did really enjoy Jamie Vardy's goal just for the sheer pace of that break with sort of peak Leicester.
Well, it was kind of the pace of the break, and then Riyad Mahrez got the ball on the edge of the United area and had a sit down, you know, on a toss.
Lit up a Rothmans.
Yeah. It was sort of like a Hamlet moment. And waited and waited and waited and waited. And it seemed a lot longer. I ended up timing it. It was only 3 seconds, but it seemed a hell of a lot longer until Vardy arrived. With Phil Jones just, you know, standing, waiting to see what would happen. Jamie Vardy arrived and boom, yeah, great goal.
And Manchester United should have won this game, Lars.
They really should have. And you feel for Mourinho and for United a little bit because they're not having a bad
season.
Do
you?
I kind of do because they're not having a bad season.
Do you,
really.
Barry?
Not in the slightest.
But one thing I thought about after that game is that a few years back, I went to one of these Football Writers Association shindigs when they honour someone that they like to do this, and they were honouring the life and times of Jose Mourinho. Maybe you were there, Baz, I'm not sure.
No, I would not.
And it
darken
was,
the doorstep of one of those events.
Well, it's free food, I guess. But it's
it's an orgy of self-congratulatory backslappery that I'd rather go to Subway and buy a meatball.
You'd never get it on the pub, would you, Baz?
No.
So I was at one of these, and Frank Lampard was speaking quite movingly and eloquently, as Frank Lampard does, and as you can imagine, he was speaking about how much Jose Mourinho has meant for his career. And he mentioned this thing that we used to talk a lot about how Mourinho would always protect his guys. You know, he would take a bullet for them, metaphorically, in public, and he would screen them from criticism when things were not going well, and he inspired this extraordinary loyalty because of this. And after the game yesterday, he basically called them all children and blamed them for everything that's going wrong. And he's not wrong, but it just seems to me it's a very long time since the days when Mourinho was doing the siege mentality thing and creating this great unity by everyone being against. Clearly, it does certainly seem to me that in his public proclamations, he's not looking after anyone else but himself these days.
Michael says, will Leicester have a player sent off every game for the rest of this season and beat Watford's record?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, thanks, Michael.
I was just going to say, there's something about this game, and the problem is you can sort of get stuck in these loops, which reminded me of seeing Leicester draw with United in the season they won the title. And I remember just watching sort of that... Well, Vardy in particular in that game. I was at a friend's house. This game was really vivid for me because I remember at the time we also weren't quite taking them seriously. And what a sort of joy in his extremely aggressive and somewhat old school version of football that he plays. What joy there was to be seen that. And there's something about this game that just really brought that back to me. It's one of those things you could hear the Leicester fans were, even though, like, they still harp on it. They were joking and singing Champions more recently than you at the United fans, right? So they still have fun with it. And it felt like a nostalgic game to me. I don't know, like seeing that goal, that first goal in particular, because it was Mahrez to Vardy. But yeah, there's something about it that just brought that back.
I agree with that.
And Harry Maguire's winner. He just doesn't look like a footballer, does he?
No, I totally agree.
He's
with
a
you.
Friendly local butcher. Yeah, he'll give you of course, Mr. Bandini. Here's a bone for your dog. He'd let your dog in.
He would. He would.
Do you think because he's a good footballer, do you think it helps him because he's deceptive? A bit like Harry Kane is deceptively good. Like Harry Kane is better than he looks.
Are you saying that Chris Smalling, now I know Chris Smalling was carrying a leg at the time, so to speak, but are you saying he thought, he's not a footballer, this Harry Maguire? He reminds me of my local friendly butcher.
I think that's what happened.
Give me a bone for my dog.
Maybe it's
some cuttings.
Oh, you've scored a goal.
Some
how could you do that?
I also really think that's Chris Smalling's internal monologue voice.
Yes. In his head, Chris Smalling has a sweet Irish lilt.
Yep.
Maybe it's a Harry thing. Are there any footballers? I mean, Harry Winks looks like a footballer, though, doesn't he? And moves like a footballer.
Mm.
And I'm out of Harry's.
But Harry Carpenter never looked like a carpenter.
That's a very good point.
Is he still alive?
I don't know. It's Harry Carpenter's name. He can't be. He'd be like 150.
He must be. I don't want to kill the man off.
I know. Well, that's fine. Producer Jonathan can find out and either we'll celebrate. He died in 2010.
Yeah. Are we going to talk about footballing Harrys without Harry Kuehl?
Harry Kuehl looks like a footballer, yeah. Doesn't he? Mm. Producer Jonathan says, please move on. In such a desperate tone. Literally, like, it's his worst nightmare that we're here. And I know that he obviously has to stay later to make this podcast get to you. So I'm slightly worried
people are wondering what we did with Paolo's dog.
Never
explained.
To be totally truthful,
he's in a bag of rocks in the bottom of the canal behind King's Place.
Somebody rescue him. Hey, Everton 0, Chelsea 0. Anyone?
Oh, I watched this.
Okay.
I quite enjoyed it because it was an incredibly frustrating afternoon for Chelsea. They were vastly superior to Everton and just could not score. It was a really organised, well-organised, classic Big Sam up yours to a vastly superior team. And Chelsea should have won by a landslide. They were, pound in the jar.
We're doing this in one take. There's no editing, Barry. Just crack on. Lars.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why Big Sam and the way he does things might not be everyone's cup of tea, but you have to respect the way he's made them so much more coherent defensively in the short time he's been there. I mean, compare that performance. Well, they were like outclassed in many aspects of the game, but they held firm against what is a very good Chelsea team. And compare that to the way they were shipping goals left, right and centre just a couple of weeks ago.
Is what he's done obvious, though? Like, why the hell wouldn't Unsworth...
But the thing is,
I was going to
ask it can't be, because then Unsworth would have done it, because Unsworth's not an idiot. He's no fool. He knows his football. Sam has got a way about him. He's able to do this in a way that very few other managers aren't.
But how hard can it be to organise a defence? You know, you can see what they're doing against Chelsea. It doesn't look that complicated. Everyone has a job. Everyone does their job. Why is Big Sam, or say Tony Pulis, when things are going well for him, why are they able to organise these players? Is it a case that they're making it look easy, even though it isn't? Or
maybe it's back to this perception thing that, like the Harry Maguire effect in reverse. They just walk in and instantly people just feel, well, we know that he knows how to organise us, even though he's doing exactly what the last manager did, because it's Sam Allardyce doing it. I believe it, like a sort of Jedi.
Maybe.
I think the self-fulfilling prophecy thing is definitely something. I spoke to a sports psychologist a while back about Harry Redknapp, what he does that's so special. And the theory from the psychologist in question was that because the players keep being told that Harry is a good man manager and will make them feel happy, when he then comes in, they start feeling happy because this man who is apparently great at man managing them is now in charge.
That's brilliant. West Ham 2, Newcastle 3. That was a good game. Does anyone have anything to say about it, or should we just crack on? I mean, the Moyes...
I think Moyes has incurred the wrath of the gods of football there when he came out recently and said he could manage any team. He got a bit ahead of himself. A couple of good results.
And also...
The gods of football, they frown on that sort of thing, you know?
That free kick, I'd had to check if Joe Hart was back in goal, because that free kick was from about 50 yards out, but Adrian got a touch of the hearts and let that one in, although it was right in the corner. Martin writes on the subject of Stoke 3, West Brom 1, if you don't get a new manager bounce with Alan Pardew, what exactly are you left with?
A cracking Christmas party.
Yeah. Great dance moves.
He cancelled the Christmas party.
Yeah, I know. But, you know.
Oh, so they're left with absolutely nothing.
Tin of pineapple chunks.
Well, look, Mark Hughes really needed that win, didn't he? He
was I think Alan Pardew really needed it.
He did, but he didn't get it.
I'm surprised. I mean, I only saw highlights, and you can, you know, edit a game to make it look any way you want.
You can edit a pod the same way too, Barry, fortunately for you.
I'm fearing the worst. And West Brom missed so many good chances. Like, Rondon alone, I know he got one, but he missed three or four. He could have had a hat-trick. So, on the basis of that performance alone, I wouldn't be ridiculously depressed if I was a West Brom fan. You know, they created enough chances to win the game.
So who's going down then?
I don't know.
Brighton beat Watford. Pascal Gross, 4 goals, 5 assists, has been involved in more goals than any other Brighton player. Well done to you. Although, Aurelio Gomez. Was it Gomez in goal?
Mm-hmm.
It was a mistake. Southampton drew with Huddersfield. Charlie Austin's been charged with violent conduct after apparently kicking Jonas Lersel in the head after he collected the ball. We all agree that...
Did you say apparently kicking...
That's what it said on the... I just don't want to be sued by anyone. It's Christmas. But yes, okay.
I'm pretty sure you can leave out that apparently. Okay. You kicked him
after
in the head.
After kicking him in the head. I don't know why, and maybe because I've met Charlie Austin and he's a nice man. I think he did intentionally kick him in the head, but only he was only being intentional for a very brief amount of time. Do you know what I mean? I reckon. I don't think he really like. It's not like
if I'm ever up on a murder rap, I really hope you're the judge.
No, I'm your character
on the jury.
But do you know what I mean? I just think it was all quite quick, and he went, probably shouldn't have done that. Anyone?
Yeah, I only meant to murder that man very briefly. And unfortunately, that's the exact window when I murdered that man. Malud.
Well, it seems to me there's not enough evidence to convict you. You are free to go. Whoops. I'm really sad that...
For the benefit of the tape, Max Rushton has just... slammed down
my gavel was full of
Icelandic petrol.
I'm having quite a sticky hand for the rest of the day anyway. Anyway, they'll miss Charlie Austin at Spurs because he's the only Southampton player that's capable of scoring a goal.
But the thing is, he's done his hamstring.
Well,
anyway.
This is a question from Matthew Marxton, who says, will Austin's ban for violent conduct be suspended until he's fit? Given he went off with a serious-looking hamstring injury yesterday. Also, Merry Christmas. Thanks, Matthew. But that's a fair point. They should wait until he's fit and then ban him.
No, they can't do that.
I think that'd be impractical. But it would be great if you could ban people for games they weren't going to miss anyway. The one that bugs me is just that bans in England carry from cup competitions to league, so you can get banned before a league cup game and skip that instead of missing a league game. But
that's all right.
It could have been. I mean, there's a proud history of English centre forwards kicking people in the head. I mean, maybe he was just doing an Alan Shearer homage. It was a bit of artistry from
Austin. What's your favourite kick to the head that you've ever seen?
I think the Alan Shearer one is amazing.
John Hartson's on Ayle Berkovic was a bit special.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Because you get the impression Berkovic probably deserved it.
Oh, once again, you're free to go. Swansea won, Crystal Palace won. The third time the Ayew brothers have scored on the same day in the Premier League. Both goals scored by Ayews were assisted by Carroll's. Andre's assisted by Andy. Jordan's assisted by Decker. It was Tom Carroll. So I don't even know what she was in. What was she in, Carol Decker?
Tapao.
It was a Tapao-based gag, which, if it goes down as badly when you're listening as it did in this room, I'd like to apologise. In the Championship, Middlesbrough beat Sheffield Wednesday 2-1, and both clubs sacked their managers after the game. Apparently, Pulis is in line to take over at Borough. Will the Borough fans be excited?
About Tony Pulis?
Mm.
If they are of particularly modest hope and expectation for this world, maybe, yeah.
They live in Middlesbrough. They're probably easily pleased.
We should do a live show for Middlesbrough, yeah. Now you said that.
No,
that could be on the
it was quite
poster.
Interesting, actually, because it was put out on Twitter from the Middlesbrough account last night that they'd parted company, quote marks, with Gary Monk. And then if you clicked on the link to the statement, it came up as an error. And because Borough were in ninth place and only, I think, 3 or 4 points off the playoffs, people were saying, has the Borough Twitter account been hacked? Is this is this Christmas wind-up? No, it wasn't. He has been sacked. Which is weird because Steve Gibson, the Borough chairman, he's renowned for his patience with managers and, you know, ninth, 3 or 4 points off the playoffs. Mm. That's not exactly crisis, is it?
I kind of want to go back and watch this game now. What was it that happened that prompted everyone involved to sack their manager?
I don't know, but lots of people are asking, has it ever happened before? 2010, this is. Brian Dennis who won the Sussex County Premier League with Eastbourne United in 2008, got his marching orders a few hours after a 1-1 draw with Red Hill. The following morning, Red Hill manager Marcus Alcindor got his. Mm. So there you go.
I'm all in favour of this. If you have a match that's sufficiently terrible, just everyone gets everyone sacked. Gets like, this was a lot of nonsense. Let's not do that again.
How do we feel about sacking someone on Christmas Eve? Seems a little bit...
Yeah, but you get a massive payoff, don't you?
Yeah.
You don't have to go to work.
Yeah, so you get a big payoff. You can get absolutely leathered on Christmas Day. You don't have to go to a game on Boxing Day. Frankly, it sounds like the best day to get fired. Apart from, obviously, I don't want to get fired today from any of my professional endeavours because I quite enjoy them.
It puts me in mind of one of my favourite acts of Italian football hubris, which was a guy called Davis Mangia, who was managing at Palermo, who... Notoriously, their owner Zamperini fires managers a lot. And there's a saying in Italy about, will a manager get to eat his panettone for Christmas? So if you get fired before Christmas, you don't get to eat your panettone. And Davis Mangia was so pleased that he had got basically right through to the verge of Christmas, when everyone had been speculating that Zamperini would fire him like he did everyone else, that he showed up for his last game press conference with panettone for himself and all the reporters, like, look, I'm going to eat my panettone. And he got fired after the game didn't make it to Christmas. Oh.
That's a good story.
Yeah. What's panettone?
That's like a cake. It's like a spongy cake.
How can you work at the Guardian, Baz, and not have heard of panettone? That's like the most... I mean, it's Italian,
I come in,
so.
I don't talk to anyone. And I don't know. Unless I have to in here, obviously.
It's one of those things that I grew up with because my dad's Italian, but also now is very much a North London...
It's got a nice lightness to it.
Yeah, well, if it's done well, yeah.
Mm. On the subject of sort of North London non-footballing-based foods, we should mention the... man at the Emirates eating carrot batons as a
game's gone
the
mate.
Game's gone Brian hasn't it. Nottingham Forest drew their first game of the season, meaning that Bristol Rovers are now the only team in the top four divisions to have not drawn a match in the league so far this season. Interesting. And should also mention Cambridge United, the Christmas present that they gave Notts County doing very well, unbeaten at home, were 3-0 down to Cambridge United in the 74th minute. Well done, the U's. We let them score 74th minute, 87th and 94th. I was listening on local radio as I drove back home. It was just so...
Go on.
I just think we swear too much and there are kids listening. But it was fucking depressing. I'll be brutally honest. It was just, you knew it was going to happen. You could feel it. The commentator's just going, we hadn't scored away from home for 700 minutes. Oh. Anyway, that'll do for part one. Sorry for swearing. Maybe bleep it out. I know we're not allowed to bleep for some reason. I don't understand. In part two, we'll start with Sid. Welcome back to part two of Guardian Football Weekly. El Clasico was yesterday. So let's say hello to Sid. Hi, Sid.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Soma says, below the line, Sid, is it just me, or does Max never ask Sid about how he is? Sid asks Max how he is, but Max does not respond in kind at all. Is there secretly some kind of beef between these two? Let it all out before there's a mutiny again. So, Sid Lowe, I'd like to ask you, and I genuinely mean it, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Max. How are you?
Well, now you've asked me twice, and I've only asked you once, and the Soma man...
You better ask again, quick, ask me again.
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, very well.
So Sid, Christmas in Spain, is it all big hams and dinner at 4 o'clock in the morning for 7 hours? And lots of people talking far too loudly?
Well, the big ham thing is certainly true. So companies that you work for in Spain tend to give out a big ham at Christmas. And it's to my immense shame that I admit that the majority of these big hams that I get, I mean, normally it's just one a year, the majority of these big hams I get end up dumped in the garage and never actually come out again.
Do they
hang on, do you have a garage?
I don't know how to cut it. If you cut a ham badly, it's completely ridiculous. Now, obviously, you can take a aforementioned very large and quite heavy pig's leg to the butchers and ask them to slice it for you, but somehow I never quite get round to it.
So hang on, is your garage full of ham?
I mean, well, not full of ham, but there's probably, you know what, if you built a body, you've probably got enough to make a pig, yeah.
So you've got like a lawnmower, a set of golf clubs, some old...
And there's no set of golf clubs, but there is a lawnmower... There's some ham. There's a fold-up bike, of course, from the Real Madrid Christmas dinner many, many years ago now.
So you've got an entire garage full of free stuff.
Not all of it is free. Some of it I paid for.
What's the biggest ham you've ever seen?
I don't know. I mean, they're all more or less the same size. I mean, bear in mind, unless you have some sort of mutant dinosaur pig, I mean, it is only a leg. You can't actually make it bigger than it really is. You know, this is kind of a pig version of Roberto Carlos out there that's got these absolutely bloody enormous thighs.
The Jordan Shaqiri of ham, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, look, I'm glad to hear that you're well, Sid. It's important to point that out.
Would you like me to send you a ham for Christmas?
Yeah, well, the postage would be a lot.
I'd love a ham.
Do you just stick a stamp on the ham, or do you pack it?
You probably would have to pack it, I think. Yeah.
That's also a shame.
Because the ham's come in cardboard boxes, and after a while... The cardboard box kind of goes a little bit translucent with the oil and the fat.
And if I know meat processing, and I think I do, it's probably already stamped with like health and elf and safety stamps. My dad does meat inspections in a bacon factory.
I don't know.
There's very little I don't know about ham, Sid.
I'll have to check that. I mean, I don't know if that may well be the case.
You don't want a ham with warts. All hell could break loose.
No, you don't really want a ham with warts. No, that's true.
So hang on, when you were growing up, did your dad take you to meat inspections at the bacon factory?
Yeah, he took me once and showed me the gut room and told me that's where I'd end up if I didn't study harder.
Okay, and did you study harder?
No, but I avoided the
No, he didn't,
room.
And he ended up somewhere even worse, as you can see.
Absolutely. Okay, El Clasico, we should probably get on to it. I mean, producer Jonathan looks like he's really losing the will to live through the glass. But that was sort of seemed quite easy for Barcelona.
I don't know that it was easy, certainly in the first half, when Madrid controlled the game reasonably well. They put a lot of pressure, particularly on Busquets, but also on Messi, to try and prevent Barcelona bringing the ball out. And Barcelona's manager, Ernesto Valverde, said afterwards that he felt that, you know, they were struggling because Madrid effectively went man-to-man on them. And so they were having to kind of go long to break through that kind of high pressure. But that once they were able to do so, they kind of eased their way into the game. And by the end of the game, yeah, it did look very easy. And I thought Barcelona were very, very impressive. In a season in which they haven't always entirely convinced, by the end of this, they certainly didn't. You know, bear in mind, this is... six months since they played in the Spanish Supercop, and you had Piqué sitting on the bench muttering and swearing, and Spanish swearing is magnificently created, but I suspect I probably shouldn't say so on a podcast, but let's say he's defecating in some things, and he says, these guys are giving us a dance, you know, they're leading us a dance, they're giving us the runaround, this is ridiculous, and after the game admitted that for the first time in the 9 years that he's been at Barcelona, he felt inferior. Well, by the end of this game, Piqué was doing something that he does when the Clásicos started to look easy in the last 10 minutes or so, and he was up the other end of the pitch trying to get a goal of his own.
Barcelona now 9 points clear at the top of La Liga. I mean, you'd never get that in the Premier League, obviously, but...
No, it's much more competitive.
Yeah, it really is. Can you see anybody catching them?
I mean, look... Realism suggests not. I mean, weird things happen in football, and Valverde was quite good because he was, after the game, he was asked about this, and, you know, he was asked about, first of all, you know, is the title over? Of course he said no. I mean, he's not going to say, yeah, we've won it, it's a piece of piss, don't worry about anyone else, because, you know, it's 9 points over Atletico, it's 11 over Valencia, it's 14 over Real Madrid, although Madrid have a game in hand. But he said that it wasn't over, but then he said, look, we're talking about where we were after the Supercopa, and we were in crisis and all the rest of it, and now we've got this lead at the top of the table. And he said, you know, there's a lesson in there for all of us. You know, there's a lesson in there for you lot, i.e. the journalists, kind of creating this narrative, which, you know, we're all guilty of doing, of saying, Barcelona are a mess. There's no way they can win the league. Madrid are clear favourites. There's a lesson for Barcelona in saying, you know, don't get cocky, because just as quick as you got this lead, it can be lost again. And, of course, a lesson there for Real Madrid, who at the start of the season, you know, some of their players were openly saying, having won the European Cup and the league last year, this is the beginning of an era. It's not the end. It's the beginning. This is where we're going to go on and dominate. And you know, as I say, what are we, 5 months further on? And there's a feeling now that the league's done. Now, look, it probably is, because they haven't lost all season. They'd have to lose at least four times now, even if Real Madrid were to win every single game between now and the end of the season. And it really doesn't seem very likely. They've also been away to Valencia, away to Atletico, away to Real Madrid now. And, you know, they're in a really, really strong position.
And the last six El Clasico red cards have all gone to Real Madrid. And that was a good one, this one, wasn't it?
It was brilliant. It was a fantastic save, wasn't it? Diving to his left, one-handed. He didn't even bother to complain, and he walked off. I suppose the only surprise was that that the red card wasn't for Sergio Ramos, who has a bit of a thing about getting daft red cards in Clasicos, and actually probably should have got one in this, where he kind of was running behind Luis Suarez and bashed him across the side of the head, and then said to the referee, it was brilliant watching it. He was saying, I promise I didn't touch him. And then after the game, he said, you know, I really didn't catch him, and there was no intent there or whatever. And then he said, but I'm sure in Barcelona, they'll be saying that I should be in prison like Puigdemont. And I, Sergio, Puigdemont's in Belgium. I mean, I know Belgium's shit, but you know, you can't call it prison.
Sid, listen, have a great Christmas.
I shall certainly try. You too.
Thanks very much, Sid Lowe, out in Spain. Hey, Italy, Paolo, what's happened? Anything exciting?
Juventus beat Roma. 1-0. Juventus have now, I mentioned Chesney having 5 clean sheets in a row. The team have had 8 clean sheets in a row because Buffon was in before he was injured. They are still not top of the table, but they are looking very, very much like they are on that course again. But for now, Napoli still top of the table. They came back twice from a goal down to beat Sampdoria. So yeah, it was another fun round.
Daniel says, please ask Paolo, will I ever witness a Roma title win again? Sad face emoji. Well, the emoji has got the sort of frowning eyebrows, but the flat mouth. So not totally sad, yeah, but sort of still on the way to sadness.
A little bit of hope. Do you know, because before this game, Roma were 3 points behind Juve, but with a game in hand. So effectively, they were, you know, very much right in there. And they're still not out of this title race at all. But it was one of those sort of symbolic occasions where it just felt like all of the things that make these teams what they are came to the fore. And I think that Mehdi Benatia scoring the winner, who is an ex-Roma player, who when he showed up at Roma took on the machine gun celebration, which was Batistuta's celebration at Roma, which was, you know, the title winning celebration at Roma, took that on when he was there, stopped doing it at Bayern Munich because they told him off for doing it, now scores against them for Juventus and does the machine gun at them. Meanwhile, Patrick Schick, who Juventus were supposed to sign in the summer, had him all the way to a medical, got him in a Juventus shirt, giving the thumbs up, then he didn't pass his medical, and so he didn't sign. Signs for Roma instead, and they're like, ha, it's a coup, he's a great player, and he's going to be brilliant for us. He misses the one-on-one at the end where he could have equalised. So it felt like all of these sort of existential moments for Roma piling down on them at once, and it's an uphill battle for everyone against Juventus, because Juventus still have the greatest resources by some measure of any team in Italy at the moment. Having said that, given that it's, what, a 9-point gap in Spain, a 300-point gap in England, at least Italy does still have a title race in the middle point of the season.
Barry, if you were to have a weaponized celebration, what weapon would you choose? Score a goal, you run to the corner flag, what are you pulling out?
I'd play a tune on an air banjo.
Oh, so not a machine gun.
It's not a weapon.
It's not a weapon.
It is a weapon if you in the wrong hands.
You can really handle a banjo. Yes, Lars?
Yeah, Paolo, earlier in the season, I, as a casual Serie A watcher, was really excited about Inter not being shambolic. How's that working out?
Yeah. Things have wobbled a little bit for Inter. They drew with Juventus, which was a good result with a not particularly great performance, and everyone thought, right, they're still top at that point. Since then, drew 0-0 with Pordenone, who are a third-tier team in the cup, beat them on penalties, lost at home to Udinese, and now they've lost away to Sassuolo. It's one of those things where they are still outplaying teams, and I think what's coming home to roost a little bit is that up to this point, they've always managed to get the goal from somewhere, and so far this season, Mauro Icardi has scored literally half of their goals, 50% of their league goals, and the last couple of games he hasn't done it. He missed a penalty this weekend, yesterday. If he doesn't score the goals, you've got Eder as your only other real option up front. I think that's, in particular, the lack of alternatives up front is going to bite them. But I'm still not really sold that this Inter team is going to fall apart. I'll probably get made look really stupid for that because they've done it plenty of times in the past. But I still think this team's got more to it than past versions.
They did seem a bit one-dimensional to me. Like, I watched this game on one of many screens I was watching stuff on, and There was almost like a hint of the famous David Moyes Man United game where they played Fulham and they sent in like 500 crosses.
Yeah.
Like, that's basically what Inter do. They get it wide and whack it in towards Icardi to see what happens.
It's not the first time this season when that sort of game plan has not really worked for them. And yes, Antonio Candreva, who, for someone who crosses the ball a phenomenal amount, I'm not ever that convinced is the best crosser of the ball.
The best crosser of the ball is Andy Hinchcliffe, so he can't.
As we all know.
Barry, Benevento.
Did you see on Sky yesterday, today being Christmas Eve, they had your colleague Paul Merson,
yes,
and Andy Hinchcliffe having a Christmas present wrapping competition.
Oh, that sounds like great television.
It probably wasn't as great as they hoped it would be.
Who won?
Merse, 2-1.
Get in. Get in there.
But one of the presents they had to wrap was a golf club.
Right.
Like, not an entire...
Oh, not Wentworth.
Yeah.
Okay.
But a brassy niblick, okay. Let's say. And, you know, it's very hard to wrap...
A golf club?
A golf club without, you know, people going, oh, it's a golf club. You know, it's not one of those ones you have to...
They had
to
a wrapping competition and they had to also disguise what they were wrapping. That's really taking it to an extra level.
Well, no, I'm saying you probably should disguise, try and keep an element of surprise.
Given this will be come out at what time? Sort of 4 p.m. Christmas Eve time. For anyone who has yet to wrap a golf club, this has been a great lesson for them.
Well, it hasn't, because I haven't explained what the best way to wrap a golf club is.
Okay. Benevento are sort of favorite.
What I'd suggest doing is cutting the golf club into loads of different bits.
A great idea.
And then putting it in a small box.
Oh, okay.
And wrapping that.
So and then it's like an Airfix model as well as a golf club, uh-huh. Isn't it? But might not be quite as good out to the heavy rough, if we're honest.
Yeah, but if you play golf, you don't deserve a nice present, do you?
Do you want to talk about Benevento or should I ask Paolo?
Paolo,
Benevento. Once again, I mean, they're the gift that keeps on giving, really, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is only looking at... So what happened, what you're referring to, is the fact that against Genoa away from home, they were headed for their second point of the season, conceded in the 91st minute, and this is not... new for them. I mean, earlier this season against Cagliari, they scored an equaliser in the 93rd minute and then conceded a winner in the 94th. Against Sassuolo, saved a penalty with the scores 1-1 injury time, managed to concede again in the 93rd minute. They have done an incredible job of finding ways not to pick up points. But the longer it goes on, the more I think, wouldn't it just be beautiful if they really did get to the end of this season with just the one point against Milan with an equaliser scored by the goalkeeper? I mean, I feel like in many ways it would be more of a, you know, a way to enjoy this season, just to let that be the mark.
And also, there'd be documentaries about it, there'd be books about it. It'd be great for the yeah. town itself,
yeah,
wouldn't
I'm completely here for Genoa's strike partnership of Goran Pandev and Adel Taarabt. Is that the most laid-back striker duo ever?
Yeah.
A physio I know talks about trying to treat Adel Taarabt and saying every time he got to the club, Adel Taarabt would just hide and just not be there. You need to treat him, spend the first hour trying to find Adel Taarabt and they couldn't.
Which is what he does on the pitch a lot of the time, yeah, as well.
He's the best professional footballer yet to have passed the ball to anyone else.
Probably true.
A feedback corner, which it seems quite short, but producer Jonathan, I put loads in the script. By the time I've got to it, he's deleted a lot of it.
There's a script.
There is a script, yeah. Last pod we were asking, do any professional footballers listen to the podcast? And a man called Joe Schobert got in touch to say, I'm a professional footballer who listens. I just happen to play American footballer. American football. Joe is a linebacker for the Cleveland Browns.
Wow.
And listens on his way to training on a Monday and a Thursday. So, hello, Joe. Thanks for being the best sports person who listens to Guardian Football Weekly.
Paolo's off to do 4 hours of NFL chat.
That's correct, yeah.
On TalkSport after this.
Mm-hmm. So you can bring in Joe Schobert. Do you know a lot about... I mean, I know the Browns
are... Have you heard of Joe?
Have they won in the last 20 years, the Browns?
No, the Browns are a deeply unsuccessful team in their modern existence. But Joe Schobert went to the Pro Bowl last year, I believe.
So
yeah, he's a good player.
He's the shining light. Joe, you're the shining light of the Browns.
Do you think listening to us on his way to training affects Joe's performances, and that's why the Cleveland Browns aren't as successful as...
Joe is single-handedly keeping that side afloat.
He's carrying the Browns
on his
back. Joe
Schobert is carrying the Browns.
Well, I don't really know American football, but is it an advantage to be angry and frustrated when you're playing? Because if so...
Is that what you think the pod does to people?
This one, maybe.
We'll finish with this, everybody. Barry, happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas,
thanks
Max.
Paolo, thanks for coming.
Merry Christmas.
Lars, thanks Merry for Christmas, coming. Max. Ed has just sent a tweet. You can fade me down whenever you like, Jonathan. Does Lars also write in the Waitrose magazine?
I should.
Eat dinner for breakfast, it says. I have a thing for savoury breakfasts. Morning meals might include the obvious choices, such as omelettes or smoked salmon and cream cheese bagels. But it's the more unusual options I really enjoy. Things like a bowl of coconut dal or smoked haddock and butter bean chowder, often defrosted that morning. You can freeze single portions in resealable bags and pop them in warm water for a few minutes before transferring to a pan. Heat gently with frozen peas, then topped with a soft boiled egg. It's a warming, filling and nutritious breakfast in minutes, plus a great way to fit in a portion of veg first thing, taking the pressure off at lunch and dinner. In warmer months, when time is short, try this quinoa salad, which can be prepared almost entirely the night before. It contains 3 of your 5 a day, is absolutely delicious, and really gets you up for the day. Toasting quinoa adds flavour and texture. Why are you looking at me like that, Barry?
Well, what?
What do you mean, what? Lars likes a savoury
breakfast. Start smoking.
But I would have
coffee and a fag.
So, but my article, just eat whatever's left from dinner the day before, just that didn't make, I don't think that would make the Waitrose magazine. I think that's not what they're looking for.
Maybe. Can I have another beer? Is there any one?
That's all gone.
The whiskey's pretty good.
Producer Jonathan is like, is that really your goodbye? Yeah, it's a goodbye. Have a great Christmas, everybody. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it.
You're listening to us. You've obviously fallen out with your family. Mum's crying on the stairs, drinking gin. Your father's hidden behind a newspaper. Yesterday's Observer. You and your sister. Those old wounds have been reopened. Have a great day.